Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This is the often requested and long anticipated Earning Their Stripes draft special. My name is Danny Martinez alongside Ian Smith. Ethan is sitting this one out today. But like I joked last week, if you are Team Ian, then this is the episode for you. Because man, Ian is going to lead this one today. Ian, let the folks know how excited you are, brother.
I mean, I've been waiting for this probably since we started. I mean, the draft is my stuff, so I hopefully can bring you guys some information today that I've put some work in. You guys will enjoy. And yes, I'm very excited for this.
Yeah, trust me. Ian has, I don't know how many notes already Ian has. I don't know all that. Like, we're going to freelance this today. But if you have been waiting for Ian, this is the episode. This is the special. He's going to shine through for us. I actually want to start off real quickly because something that happens with MLB draft, and I know you know this, Ian, is that it's just different than the NBA draft, than pro football drafts. It's different than almost every other draft because the financials in this draft matter a lot, right? So we're going to hear, y'all are going to hear us talking about going under slot or going over slot or slot value, or do they have enough money in the pool? Whatever the case is, the financials really is something to be locked in here. So I want to give you the floor, brother, so you could just explain a little bit about how the MLB draft is special, about the pool money that we have, the underslot, what it means to go underslot, overslot, whatever the case may be.
Well, with the MLB draft, you get a certain bonus pool every year to start the draft. And going into 2019, the Marlins are starting with $13,045,000, which is third best in the league. What that means is every pick is valued a certain dollar value. Like, say, the fourth pick overall is valued at $6,664. Just sounds like a bunch of numbers. But with that pick, we have the option to go at value with a player who is valued at that same number, or we could go someone like a Brett Beatty, who is a high school player right now, who's under slot, and to save money on our picks later in the draft.
So then sometimes what teams will do with that is that they'll go under slot with their top pick, right? If they're in the 5, 6, 7 range, whatever the case is, they'll go under slot, they'll save some money, and then they'll try to basically purchase or buy players that are lower in the board but would demand more cash. Now, I don't know, and we're going to talk about this, and I'll let you get back to where you were going. I don't know if that's what I want the Marlins to do this draft. There seems to be a very small amount of players that would fit that bill for what we're looking for. But that's the mentality about going under slot and over slot. It's that you're playing with the financials of who you could draft at that certain pick. But go ahead, Ian.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're playing with the financials. If you're thinking you can get a guy that you absolutely love at your next pick, if you have one in the competitive balance picks or in the added picks in the first round. Say the Marlins are sitting at $2 million at their pick 35 today. If they went under slot and were falling in love with a player who's commanding $4 million in the first round and a really tough sign, they can go under slot on their first pick, which would be not in my favor, but they could do this and sign somebody in the second round or in the competitive bounce round that would be an overslot pick. They haven't done that in recent years. They signed a player overslot last year, but it was very slight. That was Osiris Johnson. Mm-hmm. But this year, I feel like they should go strictly with their slot values at all their picks. I don't believe they should go under slot or over slot anywhere. The value's there at every spot they're at pick 435 and at pick, 46. I have pick 50 on my notes. I don't know why. But I do believe Miami will stick with their slot values this year. And if that's the case, then I feel like we're in a good spot going into the draft.
Yeah, and I'll second that. We were actually just talking about this. You know, sometimes a draft just lines up for you perfectly, right? I mean, it'd be beautiful to have the number one pick, but regardless of that, sometimes it lines up perfectly where you get that CBA, where you get that competitive balance pick. And like you just reiterated, the Marlins have three in the top 50. You know, this isn't, this isn't pro football or the NBA where you could start trading picks and you could accumulate a bunch of and allocating a bunch of picks. This is, the Marlins are just in one of those perfect years where they could get three top 50 players or draftees, and there's no reason to go underslot with that. There's no reason to go underslot and wait for an overslot pick. No, don't play with that number four. And this is just my opinion, of course, right? But don't play with that number four. Go and get the value that you need at that four. It is your first rebuilding draft. And we'll talk now about some of the players that we might be looking at for number four. But go get that value at number four, knowing that you are still going to have two more picks in the top 50 that are going to give you solid value. I would be really disappointed, right? I'll put myself out there, really, if we go under slot, aside of maybe one or two players, which you're going to hit on in a second. But let's go ahead and introduce the folks to who we might be looking at for that number four slot, which again is valued at $6,664,000. What are some of the names that you think you would be looking at?
Oh, well, so far going into this year, it's been a bunch of names. I mean, Miami fans have loved Andrew Vaughn since day one. He just tears the cover off the ball every time he plays. He's kind of a shorter, stout player at 5'11", which has got some weird numbers to it. We'll go over that later. But he's a player who's been on Miami's board for a really long time. The player that I've fallen in love with the last 2 months and has just blown up the draft boards is J.J. Blude. Mm-hmm. This kid is a left-handed batter who just oozes swag. I mean, he led the Division I with 25 homers this year. He's a Golden Spikes finalist, and he's leading probably one of the best lineups in baseball easily. He's the pick that I would fully see Miami going with if he's on the board at four, but there's some names that could blow that up. CJ Abrams has been a Miami executive favorite since day one. He is the tools, probably got the most tools in the top five picks in the draft. I mean, that includes Bobby Witt. He's really talented. He's got 80 grade speed. He hits the ball well. He can play all over the diamond. But I don't really see the value in his bat at the fourth overall pick. He reminds me a lot of a Bryce Turang from last year, who had a huge bunch of draft helium going into the year. Was a possible first overall pick as an underslot, but ended up dropping all the way to 23 overall. That's who Abrams reminds me of a lot, and that's not going to get some love by a lot of people, but
right.
That's what I see in him. So I want to see Miami go the opposite route they've went in recent years, and that's the power route. We haven't went power since probably the last college draft pick we had, and that's Colin Moran in 2013 is the last college draft mm-hmm. that we had, and that was Colin Moran, and he was supposed to be the real deal, and he's now showing it a little bit in majors, but no longer in our system. So those are a few guys that I really love. And if we're going to go under slot, there's one guy that I'd really be okay with going under slot, and that'd be Bryson Stott. I don't know how much under slot he would be. It would probably be $500,000 or less, but he's a talented player. He's a left-handed bat, plays shortstop, can really handle his position. He's got a strong arm. He's shown some immense power this year out of nowhere. And he's really controlled the plate well. And he's a player I've been talking about forever. If you guys follow me on Twitter, you know that. But he's a guy who, if we're going to go under slot in any aspect, it's going to be Bryson Stott from my eyes.
Yeah, and you've sold me on Stott too. that when I said earlier I'd be okay with maybe one or two players there, that would be, you know, if I'm being honest, it'd be towards the lower of my totem pole. I really don't want underslot at all. I want a Vaughn. I want a Blade. You know, like we didn't speak about Hunter Bishop here. I would almost also be okay with a bat like that. But I want that value pick, and you hit on it, right? And we have it here in the notes, this concept that the Marlins have two really intriguing parallels. So number one, the Marlins in their history, and I know we're dealing with new ownership, but they replicated this last year. Hardly ever go college in their first round, right? It's something that they love the prep. They love the high ceiling. This is a year where I say, no, you're going to go college. You know, if Danny GM was over there, I would go with exactly the names that you said. I would go college, and I would go hit tool and power tool, which is also something different, as you have here in the notes as well, that they've been going with that athletic body type, right? Or that they go with that athlete. And yeah, the athletes can also hit, but it's not exactly that pure advanced bat. And if you follow me at all on Twitter, you know that's what I want from this draft. I want that at 4. I want that at 35. I want that at 40. I want it across the entire first round and competitive balance, because that's what we need right now.
It's what the system calls for, you know?
Right, exactly. It's what the system calls for. And quite frankly, it's also what this draft like gives. It's what this draft yields. Every single outlet that you look at, and with your own eyes, you see that it's a bat-heavy draft where you can get a really solid bat in your competitive balance. You could get a really solid bat with those first three picks that you have in the 50. So those dynamics where it's college versus prep, like consider me on the college side. And when we're talking about high ceiling athleticism versus pure bat, consider me on the bat side. That's something to talk about with Andrew Vaughn. You have a really interesting pinpoint or a really interesting stat with Vaughn and his height. Go ahead and share that with them so then we could kind of talk a bit about it.
Yeah, I was actually just reading about Vaughn because I've just been doing a bunch of stats on him, and I came across a stat on Baseball America that since 1947, there has been a total of 4 first basemen who have played more than 20 games that are primarily right-handed first basemen, and that under the height of 6 feet. Excuse me. So 4 players since 1947 have played more than 20 games at first base. That is an insane stat to me. I mean, granted, you don't think of short first baseman all the time, and Andrew Vaughn really breaks the mold with the way he controls the bat, but that scares me a little bit. I mean, I don't care any way you look at it. I mean, he's looking to be the highest drafted first baseman since Pat Burrell, 96. Mm-hmm. And he's a talent, but if we're just going to look at numbers and history repeating itself, then that number scares me. And if he breaks the mold, then he breaks the mold. But I don't want to base our first rebuilding draft on a guy who's going to be possibly not breaking the mold and possibly not be able to handle the position going forward. And that scares me a little bit.
Yeah. And it's funny, Ian will take that stance, and he's taken that stance from the beginning. And Ian will be the first one to tell you that he's in the minority when it comes to, I guess, Marlins perception or opinion on that, right? Like, we always do the polls, or everyone's like, oh, why don't you want Vaughn? Even if Vaughn is on the, like, I see your Twitter line, even if Vaughn is there, why wouldn't you take Vaughn? But you stood by that. And when you make that kind of case, I mean, look, it makes sense. He would be a statistical anomaly. He would be the outlier of not even the decade, of a century. You know, this is someone who, if we're looking at his profile, okay, they have him listed as 6 feet. A lot of people think he's 5'11". Again, he's a righty, so you're not looking at that lefty power from first base. If you look at his grades, they're pretty unanimous across different scouts. It's usually a 60-60 with hit and power, but he's going to be limited to first. Now, if you look at that, number one, right-handed first basemen typically don't go this high in the draft anyway. Then you're definitely not taking right-handed first basemen that are under 6 feet this high in the draft. And like you said, it's your first rebuilding draft. Are you really going to take a risk on a statistical outlier? I, for the purpose of just not parroting and agreeing with everything, will say, sure. I will say that his bat, for me, right? And I've never seen him live, right? When I've only seen Andrew Vaughn and JJ Blade over their games on my Xfinity package when they're playing. You know, it's enough. I see a bat that is just pure. I think that he's the most advanced bat. I know Rutschman gets that praise, and Rutschman's just a special breed. Adley Rutschman expected to go first overall. But even Baseball America has that kind of train of thought that his bat might truly be, ideal enough for him to be that statistical anomaly. But it is scary. It is scary, and it is a reason why I could see going on to the second guy, who I think it's between one of these two individuals, really. I do think that it's between Andrew Vaughn or J.J. Bleday, right? So your guy.
Yeah.
I think it's between either Marlins Twitter's guy and Andrew Vaughn, and someone who I would be happy with if they take, and then your guy with J.J. Bleday. And you can speak a little bit about the connections that the Marlins executives have with him as well. But J.J. Bleday then seems to fit a little bit more of that mold that you would draft this high. A lefty.
Absolutely.
He's an
Absolutely.
Outfielder, and you could talk to that, but he also has that advanced bat. He also has some solid power. So talk to us a little bit about Bleday.
I just want to touch on Vaughn one last time. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I'm a pessimist on him, and I don't want to be like that because he's a great player. And if Miami does take him at 4 overall and he's there, I will be ecstatic. I mean, I'll say that now, but there's just so many things about him that makes me want to go the opposite way. And I mean, I don't want to keep harping on him, but that's what I'll do. I mean, I've watched video of Fred reports that he's maybe benefiting from a small ballpark in Cal. I mean, that could be wrong. It is what it is, whatever. But again, the peripherals don't blow off the page for me. He walks a bunch. He hits for power, yes. But the size bothers me, and we're just going to leave it at that. Anyhow, but on J.J. Bleday.
And I'll ask you this. Is there anything to the individual that says, you know what, I know that he's limited. I know that he's going to be the shortest first baseman ever, but the DH might be coming to the NL. Why not have your guy there?
That's a huge point, because I feel like the DH will be in the NL probably within the next 2 years with the way they're trying to change the rules every year now. But, I mean, if that's the way they're going to go and he's the most advanced bat in the draft, and that's the case that anybody will make, and I'll agree with that, then yes, I'm a happy camper if they go that route. He's going to be a stud, but if he's not, then I don't want to be the guy who says, yes, let's go all in and draft Andrew Vaughn when he ends up blowing out in a few years, you know?
Right, the way that the stats would say. Gotcha.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. So I'm going to go with my guy that I've fallen in love with, and that's J.J. Bleday. I fully believe if he's on the board at 4 that Miami will draft him, even if Andrew Vaughn is there. He has some connections with the scouting director in Miami, DJ Shively. He was the hitting coach at Vanderbilt when Bleday got there. Bleday is just as true of a hitter as you can imagine when you watch him swing. The swing's a tad bit unorthodox. It reminds me, the comparison I put together just to make Marlins fans happy here is a little bit Yelich, a little bit Giancarlo from the left side. He's a big guy. He's about 6'3", 220 pounds. He's stayed true to his swing his entire career. Before this year, he'd only hit 6 home runs in a season, and that was a little bit worrisome. But there's nothing to say that he came in and changed a bunch of things going into his junior year to hit all these home runs. He's staying true to what he's known, and he's just hitting the ball now, just really tapping into that raw power that he has. I see him as a true right fielder going forward. He has a plus arm. He has a little bit slow instincts, but that's something that can be corrected. If that's not the case in the outfield, he has the potential to be moved to first base. I mean, if that's what we're going to stick on this year is first base draft help, then Bleday could be as much draft help at first base as Andrew Vaughn be going forward. He's a big body. He's a left-handed bat, and he is just a stud. I mean, 25 home runs this year is scary. I mean, I remember watching Pedro Alvarez at Vanderbilt back in the day, and he just looked like a freak of nature. And he's blown his years out of the water already in one season, so that's just scary to watch. And just the connections that Miami has with him and the love that I've seen online and reading reports that they have with this guy, I could really see Miami going this route at 4.
Yeah, and you hit like on 3 things there that I think are pivotal. Number one, I'll go backwards. The connection that they have. It seems like the Marlins just know that Vanderbilt system and they know Bleday well. And I think that matters to a certain extent, because part of drafting is ambiguity, is not knowing exactly what that person is and what that person will become. The more you know an individual, the more you've seen them in the batting cages, the more you're around that person, the less the ambiguity exists. So I think I'm really, really comfortable with Bleday being the pick at 4. I think that he will be the pick as long as Vaughn is not there. And then if Vaughn Vaughn is there, it's a question. It's just a question mark. I wouldn't know. I don't know. Are they going to trust the pure bat, even though it goes against the size? Or are they going to go with the guy that they know? For me, you know, people have asked me who I would have at four. I will always continuously have the answer that Vaughn is one, or Blade is one, and then the other one is 1A. And then we could go with 2, 3, and 4, because I am okay with either of them two there. So the first point was that they know the system, or that they know the player. The second point was the first base point. Yeah. I mean, look, you look at his profile and you change his outfield to first base, he's a better first base profile than Vaughn is by a long, long stretch. 6'3", over 200 pounds. He's a long guy. He's good. He would be able to make that transition. If not, we stick him in a corner outfielder and he's perfectly fine as well. And then the third thing, which is the first thing you mentioned, was the fact that it does not seem like this power is artificial or inflated or helium or not on something that's of a strong foundation, right? Because that was the thing with Blade. His first few years at Vanderbilt, like you said, there was no power. There was nothing. Like, there was contact. There was no power, nothing in the terms of power, but there was everything else. And then all of a sudden he returns this year, and I think he's leading, or he's among the leaders, right, of home runs.
Yeah, he's leading Division One right now currently.
Yeah. So then the question is, all right, is that inflated? Are we looking at something that's artificial? I'm not talking about like him using things. I'm just saying, you know, some change that isn't sustainable. But it doesn't seem like that's the case. It seems like, again, you reiterated this, he stuck to his approach, his body simply grew. And his swing, as the more he started replicating it, the more power he was yielding. And all of a sudden, now he's this dynamic home run hitter. You know, so I think that I would be more than happy with Blade at four. I also think I would be happy with Vaughn at four, because I really believe that over the next collective bargaining, the DH is coming over. And then you have someone that could be at first base, which, for what it's worth, I'll add this. I get the stat also that you gave us. But I'll also just say that I have seen Derek Dietrich and Martin Prado and Miguel Rojas man first for like the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And when something like that is what's happening, I have a little bit more faith that someone can mold Vaughn into a first baseman that's undersized. But that's... the point still stands. So with number four, Blade, Vaughn, you hit a few other names before. Is there anyone that you would want to highlight, maybe the reason for why we might go prep with CJ Abrams if he's there, or something to that extent?
Absolutely. I mean, CJ Abrams is known to be Derek Jeter's favorite in the draft. I've been reading, and somebody's been told me when I was at the stadium last few weeks. And that's, the executives and Jeter both love Abrams, and it's hard not to love the guy. He's got a ridiculous amount of speed. He plays shortstop. He's got good instincts, but in my eyes, he's going to be a center fielder going forward. And if not a center fielder, he's going to be a second baseman. He just doesn't have the true body movements at shortstop. He's got the arm to handle the position, but I just feel like his speed will be utilized so much better in center field going forward that I think he's going to make the move. And I don't see the need in us drafting at number four another bat that's fitting the profile of literally everybody we've either signed or drafted in the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. And granted, it's working out. We're showing some improvement in the minor league system, but the power's going to have to come. And if we're going to talk about power, and I'm going to bring out the underslot thing one more last time, yep. A name that came up on Fangraphs this week is Brett Beatty at underslot pick. He is a Texas third baseman who probably profiles as a first baseman going forward. He's extremely old for a high school player. He'll be 19 in 6 months on draft day, which is quite surprising to me.
Mm-hmm.
He would be the name that's popped up for the Marlins at an underslot pick, and that really, really scares me on a lot of levels, because drafting an older first base prospect who hasn't seen top level competition at almost 20 years old with the fourth pick overall would be an uber mistake in my eyes.
Yep. Just an incredible risk.
Yeah, so I don't see them going that route, but I just had to highlight it because he's came up on some prestigious sites and on some mock drafts. So that's just a name I'd like to highlight there. But I mean, really, it really comes down to, I think, three names at four at the end of it. And that'll be Abrams, Vaughn, and Blade. I do feel like Rutschman, Witt will be gone for sure in those first three picks.
Mm-hmm.
I do not know what's going to happen at three. I could see White Sox going one of two ways with Abrams or Vaughn, but
right.
we'll see what happens. You know, you never know. So, I mean, we're going to see what happens on June 3rd, but in my eyes, it's going to come down to Bidet, Vaughn, or Abrams.
And I agree. I think that then you have like tertiary names like Riley Green, right? Riley Green is a prep advanced bat, but a lot of question marks where he would line up defensively. And again, it's a prep bat, and that's you're adding 2+ more years to the ETA than you would over an advanced college bat. Hunter Bishop is a college guy who has a significant amount of power, but the hit tool doesn't seem to be there. So again, that would be another risk. His power tool is 60 across most sites.
Looks like a freak of nature.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is someone who could fit both the bill of the, you know, athleticism and of the power, but the hit tool isn't there. And then do we again really need that? I'm a plus hit tool guy in this draft. I want a bat in our system that you can look at and say that swing is going to play and he'll be up in 2.5-3 years. I need that this year because we don't have that. You know,
yeah, the reality, can't do it across the whole system. Don't matter exactly where you look.
Exactly. And that's the issue, right? We need to fill that, and we can't fill it with another volatile bat, which would seem to kind of be where Hunter Bishop's profile leads you. And then I'll just say this for the Beatty pick, man, if they go Beatty underslot, why don't you just go underslot with Young? Because Josh Young is similar. As a matter of fact, he gets comped to Beatty. So Young is a 1-year advanced version of Beatty. You know, he's coming out of college, out of Texas Tech. I mean, with me, I would have, I think it was FanGraphs. I think you had mentioned it. Yeah. When they sent that out, my heart had a little skip beat because this is rough. It's not the year to do this. It's not the year to have that kind of risk play at your first overall pick in your first rebuilding draft. See, there's a difference between risk with Beatty and risk with the most advanced bet in the world, you know, Andrew Vaughn at the moment in this draft, right? Like, I'm okay with eating that amount of risk. I'm not okay with eating the risk that comes with Beatty. All right. So if that's who we're looking for at number one, and before we move on to not number one, but with the first pick, before we move on to our second pick, let's really quickly say what the outlets, what the mock drafts are showing right now. So we have Baseball America, FanGraphs, 2080 Baseball, CBS Sports, and Pipeline. Three of the five agree with Ian. Three of the five go with J.J. Bleday at number four. So FanGraphs, CBS Sports, and Pipeline in their most recent mock drafts all have the Marlins selecting J.J. Bleday, quite frankly, for all the same reasons that Ian said. There's a connection there. He's an advanced bat. His ETA would only be around 2 years or so. It would fit the timeline that, interestingly enough, Adam Jones, in his interview with, I'm not sure who it actually was with, but it was a great interview, him talking about the rebuilding process. That's the timeline he gave us. He said, you know, we have this 3-5 year window of building a sustainable team, that 2021 year that we always kept talking about and hypothetically putting out. Finally, a Marlins executive comes out and says that, like, look, 2021 is really the time that we're supposed to be competing. He would, this year's draft, if you get an advanced bat, would fit that timeline. Wouldn't Absolutely. Be the same if you get a prep bat. But nonetheless, that's why J.J. Bleday would be a good pick there. Baseball America, you know, that's my personal favorite. Goes with Andrew Vaughn, who also seems to be my personal favorite. So I'm telling you, there's just something in the blood with Baseball America and myself. 2080 Baseball is the only one that has this going prep. And I love 2080 Baseball. I would be surprised. I'd be surprised. I mean, the board would have to fall Rushman, Witt, and then Vaughn, which could happen. And then the Marlins would have to sit there. And basically, what 2080 Baseball is doing there is saying their executives are going to beat out their scouting directors, you know, the executives of Denbo and Jeter, who are supposedly linked with Abrams, will get the final word, and then it'll be Abrams instead of Bleday. So it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds. I think Ian will agree with me on this. The one thing that I can say is that it's a beautiful pick and a beautiful year to be at number four. You will leave this pick with a top elite, top shelf talent, as long as they don't go under slot and risk it. But if it's one of the four that we keep mentioning, you know, Marlins fans should be happy. And I think Ian will be with me on that one. All right. So then what about the other two picks that we have? What are some names that we should be zoning in on for those two value picks?
Well, if we're going to talk about risk, I think risk might be addressed at pick 35. There's some names there that could be risky, but could be extremely beneficial down the road. The first thing I'm going to bring up, that's Rhys Hines. He was once on our board going four overall to us probably the early last year. Mm-hmm. This guy has ridiculous power. It's I mean, a grade 70 plus, probably anywhere you're going to look for it. He's currently playing shortstop, probably looks at a third base or maybe corner outfield going forward. He's just a freak. I mean, the hit tool is not really there. He strikes out a good amount, but he hits the ball a long way. He reminds me a little bit of Eloy Jimenez. He's a good pick. I mean, we'd have to probably go a little bit under slot in the first round to get him at 35, but he's a guy who I really love that the Marlins would look at. I mean, it'd be risky, but he just has so much potential there that he could be a great name to pick at 35. A few other guys are both prep bats as well, or prep players as well, and that's Hunter Barco out of Jacksonville. He's a left-handed pitcher. He's big. He's funky. He's got great stuff. He's got 3+ pitches. He's a Florida commit. He's going to be kind of a tough sign coming out, but if we can get him at 35, that's a huge win for us. I know it's a prep pitcher again, but he's great. I mean, he's got good stuff. His stuff looks like it'll play for a really long time. It's easy. He's got good walk to K numbers. I mean, I like what I see out of him. And the last guy I'm going to bring up at 35 is Matthew Lugo. He's kind of a lower rated prospect. He's toolsy as hell. He's a University of Miami commit.
Oh, the Marlins love that.
You know it. He is Carlos Beltran's nephew. He's an absolute gamer. He's going to Beltran's academy currently in Puerto Rico. He's shown up against top level competition all year long. He's been at the perfect game. He's been in Jupiter. He's got an exit velocity on some of his balls, clocking in the high 90s. Once at 97. I mean, he's a talented guy. I mean, he's rated probably in the low 70s or 80s on most boards, but he's a guy I think the Marlins could take a risk on at 35 just for what they see in him and just all the uber towels, excuse me, the uber tools are drooling over. So those are three names that I really like to see there. There's a few other guys that they could look at as college bats with Greg Jones, as Craig Mish pointed out this week. He is a shortstop out of North Carolina Wilmington who just burns on the base pads. He's got 80 grade speed. He's a young guy, 21 years old. He stole 30 plus bases this year. He's another project pick just because of the hit tool, but he's a guy who could really, really add some athleticism on the base pads for us, and that's a good pick at 35 as well.
Yeah, I love two names. I love all the names you gave us, but I love two names, and I'll highlight two names there. Number one, Matthew Lugo, all right? I know you're Mr. Gator, all right? I'm going to be happy regardless of what happens, because if he doesn't sign, he gets to come to Coral Gables. He gets to play for the U. He gets to continue beating the Gators, and I'm really okay with that. But I will say this. When it comes to Barco, I genuinely believe that he will be a steal for someone in that range. And this is why. Over the last maybe decade, we've started to see a transition. I'm going to call it the Tyler Kolek effect, where we have stopped looking at prep pitchers because they have one specific amazing tool, right? We've stopped drooling over that. We've stopped drooling over the one guy that has a 70 fastball or the one guy that has this, you know, 65 off speed or curve or whatever the case is. And little by little, maybe it's the analytics, maybe it's the advanced scouting that started to come into play. We've started looking at guys that have a profile like Barco at the prep level, not at the college level, but at the prep level where it's not average, but it's consistent across the board, right? It's a 55-60 fastball, 55 slider, 55 changeup, 50-55 control, kind of that kind of situation where you're no longer betting like we used to on the 98 mile per hour or 96 mile per hour at the high school level fastball. We're betting on the entire profile. For me, if the Marlins would be able to come out of this draft with one of the guys that we highlighted at 4 and then somehow also be able to sign Barco and take him away from UF. Also, how interesting that the two we highlighted are Gators and Hurricanes. Oh, it's almost like there's a bias in here. If they come out of that and they steal Barco away from you guys, what a draft. Oof. What a draft. Because I understand that we are all tainted and scorned with the prep arms that the Marlins have basically failed at assessing. But that's the difference. We're not selling on one lottery ticket with Kolek and a fastball here. We're selling, and we're buying rather, on 4 average to plus pitches at age 18 that you would feel the fish would be able to develop moving forward. So I personally am a really big Hunter fan, Barco fan. I believe that he's going to be something special. And if the Fish are in a position to go there and somehow steal him away from UF, what an absolute first two picks.
Absolutely, man. I think he's probably one of my favorite pitchers in the draft overall. I mean, this is a very weak pitcher draft completely. Mm-hmm. But I mean, prep-wise, he's probably one of my highest rated prep guys over somebody, as you talk about, with the 98 fastball, and that's Daniel Esposito. Right. I mean, he was a guy who was looking at top five picks. Now I'm seeing him on some mocks dropping out of the first round. I mean, teams are understanding that the volatile 100-mile-an-hour fastball in high school is not the best route to go anymore. And I'm so glad the Marlins are being connected a little bit to Barco and at a player like him. I mean, he's just a prototype MLB starter. I mean, going forward, the kid's just going to add size. He's 6'4". I mean, he's got a sale-type delivery. I mean, what couldn't you like about him? So I would absolutely love the Marlins went that round at 35.
And I really don't understand why it's taken so long for teams to pick up on that. Like, I'm not trying to pretend that I know anything that scouts don't, okay? I understand that scouts look at very specific intricacies of the game that I won't even pretend to be aware of. But in my mentality, this is just, it's sensical to me that you understand that a high schooler with 95, 97 can get away with anything, because most high school bats, you're facing 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, not even, who are not going to be able to catch up to that. You give me the profile of someone that's only pumping 92, but has a nice change, has a feel for off speed, which is something that most of our prep picks, well, not really, but the ones that have failed, I guess we'll say that, don't have. They don't have a feel for the command, and they don't have a feel for their secondaries. They get by with pump and fastball, fastball, fastball. I'm not sure why it's taken so long for the baseball community to transition from saying, wow, Kolick has to be the first pick, to now realizing, okay, maybe we need a little bit more of a complete profile. We will give you a little bit less velo as long as you show us that you actually have a changeup, which is the most dangerous pitch in baseball, that you actually have an off speed that could get people off balance, and that you know where the ball is going instead of just pumping it out of the zone and freshman high schoolers being able to swing by your fastball. So that's like my little rant, but it's also the purpose of saying, you know, that's why Hunter Barco would be so special at that slot and at that value. And yeah, they're going to have to pry them out of Gainesville. But I think that it'd be worth the risk for having and adding an arm like that.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So that's at 35. What about at 46?
At 46, we're going to go probably going back. I want to go back to college bats again. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel like we have to double down in this draft on as many power bats as we can. And two names I'd really like to point out at bats at 30, at 46 would be Logan Wyatt, the first baseman out of Louisville. He kind of fits the profile of a Pavin Smith or, dare I say, Garrett Cooper. But he's a bigger left-handed bat. He's a first base only, possibly left field down the road, but most likely first base. He's got incredible plate discipline. He's got 57 to 36 walks to Ks this year, which is pretty ridiculous. He's hasn't quite tapped into his raw power that scouts expect him to have, but he's a player I could really see them looking at 46. He could be a starting first baseman within 2 years. He's developed. He stepped in right after Brendan McKay left 3 years ago in the draft. He's played all 3 years. He's a great player. He's somebody I've really fallen in love with doing this research, and I'd hopefully like them to look that route at 46. And another guy I'd like to bring up is Matt Wallner out of Southern Mississippi. He is a former first-round talent, but with tremendous power, another left-handed bat of I mean, the left-handed bats in this draft are just pretty ridiculous. If you look at
this, is the year to get one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Wallner's almost has more power in the left-handed side than Bode does. I mean, he's got 54 career home runs in 181 games. He could play both corner outfield positions, possibly first base down the road. He sits 95 on his fastball as well. So if you really want to go two ways, he possibly could be that reliever down the road. He's shown some better walk numbers this year, but he's had some problems with the hit tool in the past few years. But he's a great player. And if we're going to talk about big power, he's the big power guy. Those are two names that are college bats that I really like a lot. And if we're going to just dabble again with a risky pick, and that's Trey Faltine out of Texas. He is a developing athlete who really doesn't have a position. Scouts see him as a shortstop, second baseman going forward, but he's quite developed on the mound as well. He's got a 92 mile an hour fastball with movement and a curveball that just falls off the table. He's a Texas commit with potential to have 60 grade tools across the board. He's going to be hard to sign, and he's going to be a project coming into the year. But at 46, if we really hit on our first two picks, he's somebody I can see the Marlins looking at as a prep guy. He's just got the stuff you really just ooze over. I mean, he's got all kinds of talent, and 6'3", 195 pounds. He's just something you want to play with when you get him on the field, you know? So, that's a guy that I think they can look at it as a second round pick.
Yeah, it's no surprise, but those are all real good names. I'm a big fan of Wallner. I think that I think you can, if you get that power at that value, you take it. You try to develop that bat. It's from the left side. You could transition him to first if you need to. There's a lot about that profile. He's also big, 6 foot, I think 6 foot six, 6 foot five. Yeah. He's a big guy, big profile, a lot of power. It's someone that I understand will be risky, but someone that you can really work with moving forward and hopefully really tap into that power and develop that hit. And then you have yourself a threat for the middle of the order and someone that could be the answer at first if Vaughn isn't the answer, or if the Marlins, which I don't think the Marlins are going to be bad enough, again, because of the pitching, to get the first pick next year. But if Spencer Torkelson isn't the answer, then you have a guy in your system who you could put at first and could be that solution. All right, so I have a question, and then, you know, we'll start wrapping up. And actually, I want you to start thinking about how you would really lay out this draft. So I'm going to ask you, if you were the GM and all of the options, it was a perfect scenario for you, right? Who you would get at four, who you would get with the other two picks. So start thinking about that. But I also have a quick question for the fan that says, listen, I understand we need bats, but it still needs to be about a farm system and pitching, a farm system and pitching, and forget that we have all the talent in the world. Is there anybody at all that you would consider at four that's a pitcher?
Lodolo would get my only consideration, and that would probably even have to be at a underslot value. Right. He's a talented guy. He's going to be an MLB starter for sure. But an upper level college starter like that, there's not a prep guy I would even consider in the top 15. And Lodolo would probably be the only route I'd get, but he just doesn't fit the profile that we need, even if we need pitchers in our system. An upper-level college guy is going to go spend a year or two in Jacksonville and then jump in a system that's got 11 guys ready to throw 100 innings next year in the majors. So Lodolo would be the only guy I'd actually agree with at four. I mean, but if they're going to go super under slot, I could see them looking at Barco at four if you're going to go super duper under slot, you know, and go that route, or Jack Leiter if we're going to go under slot at four. But I really don't see a guy that they can really take a risk on right now there.
Got you. And the reality is that then the prep arms, and not even the prep arms, well, yeah, later on probably are unsignable. If you get to like Leiter at a later value, it's going to be, he's not going to sign.
Yeah, reports are saying he's getting wanting $4 million and right down or CBA, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's just going to deplete you, and it's probably not even worth it at this point, especially if you didn't go under slot, then you're really not even able at all. So the reality is that if you're looking for pitching, if you're looking for pitching in this draft, it's a bad year to look for pitching, number one. And number two, I don't see the Marlins doing that. I see the Marlins exactly like we focused on hitting. They should be doing the same. Exactly like we focus on that hit power combo. They should be doing the same. So I'm going to imagine that there's some consensus almost with everyone that has this conversation that the Marlins will likely not look pitching. But I wanted to have that conversation because there are some that say pitching should always be what you're looking at. Yeah, and I agree. If there's someone, it's Lodolo. But if not, you know, it's not happening. All right. So how do you think it lines up, or how would you line it up if you had everything and you were able to control the variables and they were there for you? What would you do at the first three picks?
My perfect first three picks in 2 weeks would start with at four. It'd be JJ Bede. I'm gonna double down on that as much as I can. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's the best value at four. Just take that as you may. I think he's going to be the pick. I would really love for him to be the pick. I think he would be an immense talent in our system. At pick 35, again, I'm going to double down. It's going to be Hunter Barco. I think he would be the best choice we could go if we were going to talk about pitching. He's a prep pitcher with all the talent in the world who could be a first rounder in any other year. So if we get him at 35 for somewhere close to our slot value, that would be a huge win for us. And at 46, it's going to come down to two players for me, but I'm going to ultimately lean on Matt Wallner. You like him as well. I talked about him a little bit ago. He's just a big power bat. He fits the system. He could be the BPA at that number. He's a great player. I mean, if the hit tool is really there, then he could be even better power tool in our system. So those are my first three picks. And if they don't go that route, Greg Jones at 46 would be awesome as well. But yeah, that's me for sure.
Sounds good. All right, so I'll go backwards. So yes, I do love Wallner. I'm going to have him at 46 as well. Like all the reasons that we have already reiterated, he would be the guy for me. Although I'm actually going to not do that. I'm going to not go Wallner because you know what I'm going to do at number one, right? So what I'm going to actually say is someone that we actually didn't talk about is Nassim Nunez.
Okay.
And like, you know, it's exciting. I think I got the name right. Nassim Nunez. It sounds pretty fair. He is basically your stereotypical individual who's going to be able to stick at short, hopefully. Okay. And has well enough speed, has okay hitting and contact rate, but will never really give you much power. I'm okay with going there at 46 if it's something that is, again, it's near slot. You're not overspending for him, and he allows you, and he's young, 18, and he allows you to have that switch bat at short. So that's where I'm going to go with that, because you know that at number one, I'm going to eventually go Vaughn. Number two, I'm going to go Barco, and I'm going to stick with Barco. I think that that's unanimous for us. I think everyone on Marlins Twitter has caught on to this train. I think we understand the value that he would have for you there, and the fact that he has 3+ pitches is all that I really need to know that it's at 35, that's what I want. And then at number one, I'm going to do the maybe unwise but risky selection of going with Vaughn. I think that I'm going to stick with the fact that I want a high hit tool, a high plate discipline, even though, again, really walk to K in the college level shouldn't be held as high a value as it is, you know, at the major league level or at the minor league level because of the competition you're facing. But still, there's something about that that's intriguing for me. The power or the ballpark factor is something that I've looked at as well. So it's not like you're alone on that island. We're not sure that the power will translate as much as it would have in other stadiums and in other areas of the country. But when I look at his swing, there is some pre-movement. There's some movement before his swing, but I think there's enough there to translate across the minor leagues and to see him, honestly, in two or two and a half years, right in the smack middle, even though he probably wouldn't start off there, of the lineup when this team is ready to compete. There's something very intriguing to me about getting the most advanced bat, at least right now, of the draft. And so I would go Vaughn, Barco, and Nunez just to get that mid athlete sent, you know, shortstop, maybe go to center field with that later pick. But I would surely be happy with your draft too. I would be thrilled if they got Wallner, Barco, and JJ Bleday. Because at the end of the day, JJ Bleday, honestly, probably even has a higher ceiling. There's more you could do with him. His swing is beautiful. I think my comp that I put on here was it Paul O'Neill?
Yeah, Paul O'Neill.
I mean, you know, I'm okay with that. Like, if you give me a Paul O'Neill career, I'm really happy with that pick at number four. So I think that the point really here is the Marlins cannot go wrong unless if they go severely under slot. If they go severely under slot, that means that there has to be a plan in place for 35 and 46, and that hopefully they attribute and they continue that plan. But man, give me that bat at four, whether it's Vaughn, whether it's Bleday, and then hopefully give me some value at 35 and 46, because this is the year to really be able to turn around the franchise as well as obviously next year.
Absolutely. I mean, for as weak as this draft is in certain areas, it's extremely strong in the areas that the Marlins need. Yep. I mean, power bats, left-handed bats, speed up the middle if we're going to still go that route, and there's value pitchers late. I mean, we can go a bunch of different routes in this draft, but every route we should go can lead to probably some immense success in this franchise. So this has got to be the year we really start making the moves to be the better franchise that we want to be.
Yep, it's going to be fun. June 3rd is right around the corner. All right. It is always a pleasure Thank you all for joining us. Sorry that Ethan couldn't join us today, but see, I told you that Ian was going to come through, right? Just amazing. We are going to have, hopefully, a prospect coming up next week. We're not going to exactly say the name quite yet, but trust me, it's someone that you're going to be very excited to talk about, and I know we're going to be excited to talk with. As always, make sure you like and subscribe wherever podcasts are found. We appreciate you. Ian, thank you, brother, and go fish.
Absolutely. Appreciate y'all, guys.